where we picked up, where we're going to pick up this time, we talked about kind of backwards or parenthetically last time, because it's hard to have a conversation about Bishul without mixing topics, because they really do interact with each other, so to speak. So the topic we're focusing on today is Toldas HaEsh, which essentially means cooking without fire, but kind of the secondary fire or the offshoots of the fire. It's hard to have a good English word for this. But essentially it means taking something that was on the fire, and then what ability does that have to cook? So we'll start with the simple example. We mentioned the idea of a Kli Rishon. And we're going to talk about today four topics: Kli Rishon, Iroi Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi. And we'll define those. So Kli Rishon means the pot of food that was on the fire. That's the pot that it's cooked in, the pot that you use it to, again, I'll start with cooking, right, as opposed to heating up, but it's the pot that's hot. It's the pot that heated up the food or cooked the food. That is what we're going to define as a Kli Rishon. So when we ask, does that have the ability to cook, which it does, but when we ask the question today, which we'll ask about all of these cases, that would mean if I take something that's not cooked and put it in, right? So like the example we gave last time, if I were to take a pot of really hot soup and take something that's not cooked, we'll make it really simple, raw vegetables, raw piece of chicken. And I, well, that's a bad example because you wouldn't do that because it's not going to really cook. But if I put it in to the soup on Shabbos, that would be a violation of Bishul. Again, the chicken one, as we talked about last time, would probably be of rabbinic nature because it's not really going to fully cook, but I don't want to review everything we did last time. But not allowed to do that on Shabbos. When we talk about, which we will get to in about 10, 15 minutes or so, Iroi Kli Rishon, that's the topic of pouring from a Kli Rishon onto some non-cooked food. We also talked about that indirectly last time. That was what we talked about in terms of filling up your second cup of coffee or tea when you still have cold droplets of water in the first cup, because now you're pouring from the Kli Rishon onto some non-cooked food. Again, that would be the simple example. We'll talk about some others. Kli Sheni. Well, let's just for now, we'll get the examples later. It's not cooked. Right? So
you're popping up the coffee.
No, so that's not the same thing as we talked about. Right. Last time we talked about it have to be not cooked. In the case of a liquid, that means cold.
Okay?
And then there's Kli Sheni, which has some real ramifications. In terms of if I take that pot of soup, I know no one will do this, and I pour it, forget ladle, we'll talk about ladles later, and I pour it out onto some non-cooked food, right? So let's say, for example, you have raw vegetables. I don't know, people, no one in your house, but one person, no one likes the carrots. Again, this is not really practical because it won't make them cooked, but just to make the point. So you pop some raw carrots in a bowl, and you take the big pot of soup, and you pour it over it. I'm sorry, that's Iroi Kli Rishon. Once I pour it, let me rephrase. If I take that pot of soup and I pour it into another pot, right? That's my Kli Sheni, right? So the question is, can I put something that's not cooked into that? Okay, I'll give you a very good example. And we'll talk about this at length towards the end. A tea bag, right? So there's different opinions about how to make tea on Shabbos. We'll get to that at the end. Okay, either way, everyone's going to have good tea on Shabbos, regardless of which opinions you follow and how you do it. But what I'm about to say, everyone agrees, is not allowed. What you're not allowed to do is take a tea bag, which is not cooked. The tea leaves are not cooked, unlike coffee. So I'm leaving coffee. Like if you have like instant coffee, that is cooked before. So we'll talk about that separately. So a tea bag, which is tea leaves not cooked, what for sure you're not allowed to do is take your urn, take water from your urn, put it into another cup, right, that's a Kli Sheni, and put the tea bag into that, okay? We'll talk about transferring it into a third cup, and then we'll talk about that later. So the question, again, of Kli Rishon is, taking that hot pot, can I put non-cooked foods into that? The question of Iroi Kli Rishon is taking that hot pot, pouring it onto some uncooked food. And this third question of Kli Sheni is taking the hot pot, pouring it into a second pot, and then putting something non-cooked into that. And then finally, which we'll get to at the end, the idea of kli shlishi, which is a third transfer, right? So I have my urn, put water into a cup, pour that into another cup, so now am I allowed to put something uncooked into that? Those are our questions, those are the cases that we're going to talk about. So what I want to start off with, if we just take a quick look, again, I'm trying to do a couple of sources as we go. If you look at slide 23, I just give you the two rules. Again, it's not so you could listen without seeing it there. But there's a general rule learned out from a Mishnah with a few lines of Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, which says, typically speaking, the rules are Kli Rishon Mavashel and Kli Sheni Eino Mavashel, which means that a Kli Rishon does have the ability to cook, and that's pretty straightforward. There isn't going to be any anything more than that. Again, we have to talk about practical examples. But a Kli Rishon cooks. There's no debate. And again, I just want to remind, we mentioned this last time, of course a Kli Rishon cooks if it's on the fire, but that's not our case. If you take a pot of hot soup on the fire Friday night, let's say you keep the stove on, and then you put something raw into that on Shabbos, right, that's not what we're talking about. That's cooking on the fire. What we're talking about is you took the pot of soup really hot off the fire, put it on the counter, right? That is what we're saying still has the ability to cook. We'll talk in a few minutes why. Okay? That still has the ability to cook. You can't put anything raw into that. Last week we talked a little bit about the bishul achar ofa and not being able to put baked croutons or something like that into the pot of soup. Again, we'll come back to that conversation today. I think I mentioned last time that I don't want to scare anyone off because I wouldn't have any soup on Shabbos if I couldn't have challah dipped into it. Also, it's just a question of doing it in the proper way. Okay, so...
Rishon once you move it off the fire.
It's still a kli rishon, yes, once you put it off, take it off the fire. So now, there is a conversation, though, about kli sheni. Again, the Gemara seems to say pretty clearly that a kli sheni is eino mevashel, which means it doesn't cook. So the first question I want to deal with is why? Like, what's the difference? Right? You could take a pot of hot soup, pour it directly into another pot, it's still going to be smoking hot, right? And yet there's very big halachic difference between what you can put into the first one and the second one. That's question one. Question two is not really a question. We're going to learn another exception. The Mishnah tells us there are exceptions to kli sheni, and we'll have to talk about those. Meaning there are things that, even though the rule is kli sheni doesn't cook, it's not so simple. There are some things that it does cook. So we'll leave that for a few minutes. So the commentators explain, what exactly is it? How do we logically understand this difference between a kli rishon and a kli sheni? To say that if I have my pot of soup, I can't put in a raw vegetable. Again, forget about that you wouldn't want to. That's not the point. Right? If I would put some raw food into the pot of hot soup, that's the kli rishon, it will cook. Usher on Shabbos, right? By the way, most of what we're talking about today in these regards are actually considered biblical bishul too, not just rabbinic. There may be some exceptions. We'll see if that comes out later. So why is that the case? But the second I transfer it into some other kli, right, if you put your hand in there, you're still going to burn yourself terribly, right? So why is it that this rule is kli sheni eino mevashel? And we're going to see by the end of today, there's some really big differences between coffee and tea. One, I'll just mention one for example, even though this might surprise some of you because you might have been trained in a certain way, and it's not a bad idea because it's someone might have, whoever you might have learned this from initially, might have just trying to be safe so that people don't make mistakes, and I think that's a good logic, but at the same time, we're here to learn and to learn what it really is. So for example, we mentioned tea. So if your custom is at the end of the shiur, we'll talk about the different customs. If your custom is to make tea with a tea bag on Shabbos, you're going to use a kli shlishi because that's going to be the only way to use a tea bag. But let's say coffee, if you make a cup of coffee in the morning, so do you need to use a kli shlishi? The answer really is no. And we'll talk about why in a little while. So the point is...
You're talking about instant coffee?
Instant coffee. Well, I don't know any other... Well, Yeah, let's leave it at that, because there, you know, how to make other coffee on Shabbos is an interesting conversation too. A Rav of mine in the past once wrote a really interesting article on whether or not you can use a timer to make coffee on Shabbos. That's a separate topic. We're not going to go there today, because that really has little to do with our topic. It has more to do with the use of timers on Shabbos. And, well, it does have to do with our topic, because what happens to something that is cooked on Shabbos is a conversation, right? If somebody were to violate the halacha of bishul on Shabbos, by the way, right, you're not allowed to eat that food on Shabbos. You're allowed to eat it after Shabbos. Again, that's another topic. So let's come back to ours. So why is it that Kli Rishon is Mevashel and Kli Sheni is Eino Mevashel? That's question one. So the Balei HaTosfot explain that this is not about temperature in and of itself, because otherwise, as we mentioned, Kli Sheni should be able to cook too, to at least for some amount of time. What the idea here is that when you have a pot that has been sitting on the fire for some length amount of time, that it's gotten really hot, not only is the contents of the pot hot, but the walls of the pot are hot, and they have been heated by the fire. So that, to some extent, and I don't know exactly the physics of this perfectly, even when you take the pot of food off the fire, there still is the ability at least of maintaining, and perhaps for some amount of time, depending on how long the pot's been on the fire, for it to slightly even increase, because the pot walls are extremely hot from the fire itself. As opposed to once you move it out of that pot, so the moment you move the pot, the soup from the Kli Rishon to the Kli Sheni, it's in a downward motion. It might still be really hot, but the trajectory of the pot is in a downward motion. And again, this physics is simple, right? I don't have to do with physics, I guess it is. If we were to do a little science experiment and take a pot of soup, let's do this really scientifically, take two exact same size pots of soup with the exact same amount of soup in them, or we could do this with hot water, it would be a little simpler, and heat them both for the exact same amount of time. At the exact same moment, take them off the fire. One of them take some temperatures. Take the other one and transfer it into a second, you know, a Kli Sheni, what we're talking about. Come back 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, it's going to be very clear that the one that was transferred into a Kli Sheni will reduce temperature drastically quicker than the first one. That, I think, is really the essence of the principle that Kli Rishon is Mevashel and Kli Sheni is not Mevashel. That's the basic point. Now, that being said, if we just flip the page, so again, I just want to make this blanket rule. Well, you know, let's look at slide 26. So Kli Rishon is Mevashel. So does that mean that you're not allowed to put anything into a Kli Rishon? Again, off the fire. On the fire, we know we're never allowed to do that. Are we ever... I just told you Kli Rishon is Mevashel. So now let's talk practically. Right? So I know practically that means don't take anything that's raw and put it into a Kli Rishon. So I think most of the time we're all going to be okay with that, because it's also not going to be like practical, right? Like I said before, you're not going to take a raw carrot and throw it into a pot of soup and expect that 5 minutes later you're going to want to eat that, right? It's not going to really cook it, right? You're not allowed to do it anyway, right? But so let's take now the theory out and just focus on the practical. Before we come up with other examples, what would be something, right? Or is there something, I'm asking as a question, and everybody should answer this one, at least if you were here last time, because we talked about this indirectly. What would be something that you could put into a Kli Rishon? Good, something cooked, right? It's obvious. So I think the best example, very practical one, would be the noodles we talked about the last time, right? Some people, like, debates within the house, do you keep the noodles in the soup, out of the soup, how do you cook it, whatever, right? So you could take cold noodles, right? Make sure they're not really wet. We talked about that a bit, because then the wetness might be problematic. But assuming you have cold, dry noodles that were cooked yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever, you're allowed to put those in the pot itself, because we learned last week, ein bishul achar bishul. Once something is cooked, it's cooked. There's nothing that you're going to do to it. So that is something that you are allowed to do. Now, there is one exception, and this is an interesting one, and this relates back to our coffee. Based on what I just said to you, you guys should all be able to tell me, and again, whether this is practical or not, let's leave aside, practical in terms of how you would make coffee. So I told you before that instant coffee is cooked. In the processing, it's cooked. So maybe I should be able to take, you know, a big hot pot, old style, let's say, tea kettle, something like that. Take that right off the fire and for my whole company, make a big pot of coffee like that, because we learned together in Bishul Achar Bishul, right? If I'm telling you that the coffee is already cooked, so that should be okay. So in actuality, that's not the case, because that's an exception. When it comes to foods that are soluble, the Poskim explain that since the coffee essentially becomes, I don't know what the right way to describe this, consumed within, right, it dissolves into the liquid, we treat it like a liquid. Let me repeat that. Since it gets dissolved and soluble into the liquid, we treat it like a liquid, right? So what's the halacha of a cold liquid? Am I allowed to put that into a Kli Rishon? No, we learned last week that when it comes to liquids, yesh bishul achar bishul, right? So I would not be allowed to put a cold liquid. So a strange example, I mean, it makes some sense, but it's, right, is that a soluble food, and the only examples I could think of would be any type of instant whatever, right? Any kind of instant coffee or hot chocolate, things like that. Salt is a great question. Let's talk about that after. Salt is different because salt is not, well, whether or not salt is cooked or not, right, when it's processed, so that we have to double check. But assuming that salt, the salt cook, I don't believe the salt that we have is cooked in the processing, but I haven't thought about that in a while, so I'm not positive. But assuming that the food is cooked, right, so for example, there might be other, I don't want to say spices, because most spices, and we're going to talk about spices at length in a few minutes, most spices are, by definition, not cooked ahead of time, right, so for our purposes, let's think coffee, hot chocolate. Those, I think, are good examples where typically they are cooked in this process before they're made into it. So the halacha is that you are not allowed to put those into a Kli Rishon. Again, you're going to still be able to make your coffee. You're going to still be able to make your hot chocolate. You just won't be able to make the big pot in a Kli Rishon. So that's the exception to the rule. And the other one, which I'll just touch on, and we mentioned it last time, is, I'm trying to think, and I think we came up with some examples, is when it comes to liquids, so remember we talked liquids are based on heat. So if you were to take, if you had, like, say, for example, again, why you would do this, I don't know. If you had a small Kli Rishon, right? And then you pour, like, really quickly a lot of cold water, then that would be okay, because in essence, the cold water is going to cool down the hot and not the opposite. So we'd have to come up with examples. It could be the examples we talked about last week about returning soup to the pot. Again, the example we talked about last week is not this, because we talked about a big hot pot of soup and only putting it back a little bit. And the example we talked about also was it wasn't cold, it was, you know, we were just putting it back after we didn't like it the first time. But in essence, liquids, keep in mind, potentially, if you're pouring a lot of cold water into a Kli Rishon off the fire, there might be room that that would be okay as well. Now, one other topic, I don't know if this is one that anyone here has to deal with on a daily basis, but if not, it's of interest, so it's typically brought into this conversation. If anyone has babies at home, right? So how do you heat up a baby's bottle on Shabbos, right? So that's an interesting question too, if you want to warm up the bottle. So the only thing I'm telling you right now that you can not do, even though we might not have thought about it this way, right? Typically baby formula, unlike milk, we'll talk about milk later, if you're dealing with milk, it would, even with just a bottle of milk, you would not be able to take a Kli Rishon, take the baby's bottle, cold, and put it in. You might have thought that, well, it's like you've got this container around it and you're putting the container of the bottle in it. And we'll see that that bottle itself actually is significant in the next conversation in terms of how to heat it up. So we'll talk about how to make the baby's bottle warmed up on Shabbos, but the way, one way that you're not allowed to do, again, is in a Kli Rishon. So again, bottom line is when it comes to Kli Rishon, it's going to cook, and therefore, with the exception of things that are cooked already, or that other exception, which again, I don't know how often will be very practical, of pouring a lot of cold water in, we don't put things that are not cooked into a Kli Rishon. Now, let's talk about Iruy Kli Rishon. So again, the question of Iruy Kli Rishon is taking a hot pot, or the urn is a better example, right, and putting that directly on top some uncooked food. So I'll give you the perfect example. We'll stick with our tea bag. So we already said you're not allowed to take the tea bag and put it into the Kli Rishon. That we already said. You're also not allowed to take an empty cup, put the tea bag in it, go over to the urn, and pour the water in, because it's going to come right on top of the tea bag, and it will cook the tea. So that's what we call Iruy Kli Rishon. Now the question really is, before we talk about some practical examples beyond that, so does Iruy Kli Rishon have the ability to cook? I told you before, Kli Rishon can cook. Told you before, even though we're going to make it a little more complicated in the next few minutes, Kli Sheni typically shouldn't be able to cook. So Iruy Kli Rishon presumably is what? More like Kli Rishon? More like Kli Sheni? Maybe somewhere in the middle. In fact, that's the debate. There actually are three different opinions in the original early commentators. Some say Iruy Kli Rishon cooks just like a Kli Rishon does. Some say it doesn't cook at all, like a Kli Sheni. And some say it does cook, and this is really important. This might ring some bells in terms of kashrus conversations, because this topic of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi is very relevant in the laws of basar b'chalav, of meat and milk. So there's the idea of mevashel kedei klipa. Right, so I'll give you the kashrus example. And I know no one in their house is going to ever do this, and we're never going to get anywhere near a situation to bring meat and milk together. But let's say you were to take a piece of raw meat, and you take a pot of hot milk, and you pour it on top of the meat. Right? So if they're cooked together, besides violating the malacha of, right, the isser of cooking meat and milk together, you're actually not allowed to cook meat and milk together, not just eat it, you're not allowed to cook it. So what do you do with that piece of meat? $100 piece of meat. Nice, big, thick, whatever piece of meat. What do you do? Let me rephrase. What's the halacha? Not what we would do. We would run far away from it, right? But it's a $100 piece of meat, right? Let's make it extreme. $500 piece of meat. Now you're going to just throw it out if that's not the halacha, right? So the halacha is, based on this conversation, that we actually follow the middle road opinion, that Iruy, right, that's Iruy, I'm pouring hot milk right onto the piece of meat, Iruy is mevashel kedei klipa, which means that it's only able to cook the outer layer of the food. So it's not like a Kli Rishon, which we assume can cook through and through. It's not like a Kli Sheni, which we assume doesn't cook at all. It can cook, but a little bit. So again, you'd have to figure out what a kedei klipa is, and the post can talk about that, and you'd really just have to cut off a certain, you know, what's that? Of course, if the milk wasn't hot, then you figure out a right way to dry it and get rid of it, and you know, you got to figure that out. But so in that particular case, whatever a kedei klipa is, you would cut that off of the meat, and you really would be able to make that meat. And shalom al yisrael, you have your meat and you saved it. So now, coming back to Bishul B'Shabbos, so let's just understand quickly the three opinions, right? Again, let me just say this first. We happen to follow, both in Kashrus and in Shabbos, this middle opinion. So that's nice that I saved your piece of meat for Kashrus example, but on Shabbos you can't cook even if it's a small amount, right? So we're going to assume you cannot do Iruy at all. The same way we don't do a Kli Rishon at all, we're going to assume you can't do Iruy at all. But I think I just want to talk for 1 minute about the logic here. On the one hand, we explained that Kli Rishon cooks because of those hot walls. So maybe one could argue that if you literally take your pot of soup, I'm going to keep that example, and you pour it out, right? So it doesn't have those hot walls anymore, right? It's out of the hot walls, right? The whole chop was the hot walls. So that's the logic to say, well, it's no longer able to cook, right? That's the opinion on the side that says Eruy does not have the ability to cook. So what's the logic of the other opinion that says it does have the ability to cook? Anyone want to take a guess? Excellent. So the whole idea, it hasn't reached those cold walls yet. The whole idea of Kli Sheni was that the hot stuff hit the walls of the Kli Sheni, which were cold, and automatically that cooling process started, right? And therefore, Kli Sheni, that's the whole idea. So maybe the minute, even though you're right, it's a second off of the pot, it hasn't yet started the cooling process, so maybe it can cook. Or perhaps in the middle, and I'll take the question, in the middle, the answer is it's neither, right? It's not still in the hot walls. It's not yet in the cold walls. It's somewhere in the middle. And I believe that's really the logic as to why we assume that it can only cook somewhat. It cannot cook as much as the Kli Rishon. And that's why, like we said, it can only cook Kedei Klipa, the outer layer, which for Kashrus has very big ramifications, like the example I gave you. For Shabbos, it just means that you need to void it. Yes, question. The pouring of the water onto something not cooked. So that's, we're getting there. That's the case of Kli Sheni. Good. So we mentioned that we're going to get there, and we're going to explain why that is. So far, based on what we've learned today, what you just asked should be okay, but we're not done with the story yet. Okay? So now, again, I think the best practical example is the one I gave you last time here in terms of Eruy, because again, none of us are doing these other things like using really raw food and pouring. It's just not practical. You're not going to have any interest in doing that. I think the best example is when you have your second cup of coffee or second cup of tea or something like that, or a second bowl of soup and you're really empty and the liquid in the that's left over is really already cold, which most likely if you're down to the last droplets it is, so then really one should dry the cup and then pour in the second one. That would, because otherwise you're pouring from the urn directly onto the cold liquid. That would be, I think, the simplest and most practical example. So now let's talk about Kli Sheni for a little bit. So this one is actually, we could spend a whole day just talking about Kli Sheni. So Kli Sheni is a little bit strange, because on the one hand, the Gemara in numerous places gives us this principle, Kli Sheni Einu Mevashel, Kli Sheni Einu Mevashel. The problem is that the Mishnah already gives us exceptions. Now the exceptions that the Mishnah lists, I don't think are foods that any of us will ever encounter. But that's not necessarily relevant because it's the principle that it describes which does. So if we take a look at slide 34, I'm just going to read you one line. This is the Gemara we're referring to, which in the first two lines talks about the idea of Ein Bishol Achar Bishol and things of that nature, and a Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, fine. The exceptions are, if you look at the third line there, I don't know about you, my eyes are starting to go, I can't read this so easily. Chutz min hameliach hayashan v'kulyas ha'ispinin shahadachasan zuhi gemar malachtam. So essentially what this means is that there are examples of what we will call, our practical term for them, will be kale, from the lashon of kal, easy, kale habishal. Things that cooked so easily, for reasons we'll talk about in a minute, that even those things will cook in a Kli Sheni. Meaning, yes, normally Kli Sheni is not able to cook. But the Mishnah already tells us that there are exceptions. What are those exceptions? So the term is going to be called Kali Abishal. The specific examples, Meliach HaYashan is some kind of old salted fish, which apparently like really tiny little fish that I guess any type of hot anything will cook already because they're so thin. And Meliach HaYashan, the commentaries explain, also referring to some, I think, Spanish mackerel, some kind of also very thin fish. So I don't know if anybody has Spanish mackerel around here in Toronto or not. But the point is that there is an exception. Now, what does that mean for us if we don't have those foods? So for that, we need the next slide. So the next slide, just a quick background. I think it's important, especially in Hilchos Shabbos, but really in all areas of halacha. So we know that the one of the main commentaries, or main, what's the right word, contemporary, again, he passed away in the early 1930s, but it's still relatively contemporary, is the Sefer called the Mishneh Berurah, written by the Chafetz Chaim. And if you open up a Sefer called the Mishneh Berurah, you'll find on the top the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which was, you know, back to the late 1400s. And his commentary is on that. Now, on that same page, he has actually three commentaries. One is what we refer to as the Mishneh Berurah, which is him kind of talking about what the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah say and bringing in other opinions and telling us his opinion. And then the second one, which is what we're about to read from, is called the Be'er Halacha, written by him as well. Kind of Be'er Halacha, the explanation. It's a little longer discussion. And there's a third one on the bottom of the page, which is just his footnotes, called the Shahar Tzion. We don't have to talk about that one. So anyway, so the Mishneh Berurah, the Chofetz Chaim, in his Sefer Be'er Halacha, says as follows. Look right there. That's in the red on the next slide. The Kulyas HaIspinen. The Lav Dafka, you don't have it in red, sorry, I'm looking at a colored one. So in the middle of slide 36, in the mid, right there in the middle. The Lav Dafka Elu, meaning it's not specifically these fish that maybe no one in the world has seen in quite a while. Dehu Adin L'chol Kayotze Baza. The same thing would be true for anything similar to them, and what was similar to them, what were the characteristics of them? Davar dak v'rach b'yoser. Something that is very thin, soft. Poskim today add to that flaky, perhaps. Right? So something that is very thin and flaky is going to be the idea here that even though typically a klisheni is not mevashel. Right? So technically speaking, I should be able to take something raw and put it into a klisheni. The halacha is there's an exception. And the exception is that these thin, flaky things that are so easily cooked, they will cook even in a klisheni. So the best, most important example, although there are others, is tea. Okay? Similarly, pepper, like most spices, again, as I'm thinking, I believe, kind of back to your point, I believe salt is cooked in its processing. But any uncooked spice would be the same thing, that you wouldn't be able to take the spice or the tea bag and use it in a klisheni, which, again, doesn't mean you can't use your spices or doesn't mean you can't have pepper in your soup, right? It just means that your soup bowl cannot be a klisheni, right? Well, that's all we're talking about right now is klisheni. We'll talk about that towards the end. So how you get it into your soup bowl, just give me some time. But that is the idea. Now, there's one more complication to this. And that is, it's a little bit, I admit it, it's a little bit strange, but all the posts can make the same point. We don't really have a list of what Kali HaBishul really is, right? It sounds like at some point in time, from the time of the Gemara to the Rishonim, there was some kind of Mesorah, some kind of oral tradition as to what was in this category. And therefore, at that time, people were using a klisheni for everything but the Kali HaBishul. Somehow that Mesorah was lost, and therefore we don't really know for sure what else might be in this category of klisheni. And therefore, and this is the end of the klisheni conversation, but it's kind of a little bit anticlimactic, we started off by saying kli rishon is mevashel, klisheni is not mevashel. So you should be able to put something raw into a klisheni, but now we're saying there's an exception. There are things that will get cooked easily, Kali HaBishul, so you can't put those into a klisheni. But now I don't even know what those things are. So what's the bottom line? Halacha, practically for us, is we don't put anything that's not cooked, of course, not cooked, into a klisheni. Again, you can still do your coffee. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay? But anything not cooked, we don't put into a klisheni because we don't know for sure what is in this list of Kali HaBishul. So the exception to that rule, the only real things that I'm aware of that you could put in a kli sheni are all the things that we talked about that you could put in a kli rishon, i.e. cooked things, so that's not a chiddush anymore. And the other one is what we talked about, the soluble foods, meaning we were strict. Let's say coffee, instant coffee, is really cooked. So you would have thought, we said originally, that you could put that and make a big urn. Well, urn is a harder example, but a big pot that's a kli rishon of coffee with instant coffee. But we said, no, we're going to be strict on that. The poskim are strict because since it dissolves into the liquid, we treat it like a liquid, and therefore it's as if we're pouring a little bit of cold liquid into a hot pot, which of a kli rishon, we don't do that. That chumrah, that stringency, we don't apply to a kli sheni. So technically speaking, and again, give me 5 or 10 more minutes and we'll see why some of you might have been trained otherwise, but technically speaking, before we go anywhere else, you are allowed, for sure, to take instant coffee and pour it into the kli sheni to make it that way. Again, what can you add to it? So that might be something different, and that might be a reason why we use a kli shlishi, okay? But let's give that, give me just a few minutes till we get to kli shlishi. So I think what I just said, I'm not going to repeat it again, is summarized very well in slide 39, kind of the progression of really kli sheni shouldn't be able to cook, but there's an exception. And because we no longer know what those exceptions are, so we don't do this at all. Now, there is one other exception, and this is a very important example, right? Because based on what I just said, you guys should all be asking me a question. So it's nice that, you know, I told you that you can make coffee, but what do you put into coffee? Well, milk, right? So can I add milk into a kli sheni? So, is it cooking the milk? So we talked, this is all complicated, but right, if you weren't here last week, I'll try to bring it together. We talked last week about liquids and whether or not they can be reheated or not. The typical rule is that we assume once a liquid is cooled down, you're not allowed to heat it up again on Shabbos, right? Bishel achar bishel when it comes to liquids, right? So if I'm telling you that the bottom line is that a kli sheni, we have to be strict and assume that I don't know what's in that category of kali habishal anymore, so maybe I can't put the milk into it either. I'm putting a cold liquid into a kli sheni, maybe it's going to cook, right? So that would be a good argument. The poskim, the Mishnah Berurah actually says no. And this is this concept will, you know, bring back some old, seminary days or shiurim days, depending. Is a little bit more of a general halacha concept, which we don't hear all the time. Why is it that you're allowed to add the milk? So the poskim say there's a concept in halacha which we use very often called a sfeik sfeika. What is a sfeik sfeika? It is a double doubt, meaning a doubt within another doubt, as opposed to two doubts, right? Two independent doubts is not a sfeik sfeika. A doubt within another doubt. So what's the sfeik sfeika over here? So on the one hand, which way we put it first, truth is it doesn't matter. You could say it either way. The milk, is it kali habishal? We don't know. So on the one hand, if it's not, then I should be okay, right? The only reason why I'm somewhat of in doubt is because it might be. But even if it is, am I allowed to recook a cooked liquid? I just told you no, but is that so simple? Right, last week we mentioned that it actually is a debate. It's a machlokas in the Rishonim whether or not a liquid is, there is bishel achar bishel. We talked about that, and if you weren't here, you'll see that information with some description in the earlier slides. There were some original Rishonim, even though if we were to quote them out loud today, we would be called, you know, blasphemers. Right? There were some original Rishonim that said there's no difference between cooked liquids and solids. Even though your pot of soup is cooled down, it's still considered cooked, right? Ein bishel achar bishel. So again, we don't happen to follow that, but it is a halachic debate. In halacha, that would be viewed as a suffix too. Who do we follow? So therefore, the poskim say that because of this double doubt, when it comes to cold, cooked liquids, and the only example that's really relevant is milk, right? Milk is cooked in its pasteurization process. So you're allowed to put milk into a kli sheni. That's the other exception. So the exception was this. The other exception was the soluble foods like the instant coffee. And then I didn't even list it here because it's obvious at this point anything that's cooked already you could put into a kli sheni. Now let's talk about a kli shlishi. Now this is fun. Now, the challenge with this is despite all of our practices, there's very little early commentators that talk about a kli shlishi. And when I say early, I mean like before the last 150 years, maybe even less than that. So does a kli shlishi have the ability to cook? Now let's just take a step back. We have our complication in here that we already said a kli sheni shouldn't cook. It's not so simple now because of this kali habishal problem that we have. So now when we transfer into a kli shlishi, does that go away? Right? Does that whole kali habishal thing go away? Or maybe one could argue, right? One could argue it doesn't really matter because a kli shlishi doesn't cook anything, perhaps. Again, where we would get such a thing, we'll see in a minute. Rav Moshe Feinstein is that opinion, and that's why for those of you who use tea bags on Shabbos, right, in a kli shlishi, that's based on the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, where he says that that's permissible. We'll see that in a minute or two. But the point is, it's a little bit hard here because there's not so much to work with in terms of early commentary. So, in fact, this one may not be so well known. If you take a look at slide 46, so it starts off with the posek, very well known early 20th century posek who lived in Eretz Yisrael by the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish says the following: Lo matzinu makor, we have not found any source lechalek bein sheni l'shlishi, meaning I have no source earlier to suggest that a kli shlishi should be any different than a kli sheni. Vim ha'devarim is bashlam b'sheni. If something will cook in a sheni, misbashlam gam b'shlishi, it will also cook in a kli shlishi. This is going to be the source of the strict opinion. Interestingly, not everybody knows this, right? V'chein pasak harav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, was of the opinion, just like the Chazon Ish, on the strict side of this debate, that a kli shlishi is no different than a kli sheni. I never heard this from Rav Soloveitchik. I wasn't zochet to, I'm not old enough really to have learned from him, but all of my Rebbeim and YU were students of Rav Soloveitchik, and they all said this over the same way. He would always say in his broken English, it doesn't matter if it's kli shlishi, revi, chamishi, right? You can keep going 25 cups, and it's still the same thing, that we don't have a source in Chazal, a source of early literature, to tell us that there's any difference, and therefore, according to this opinion, whatever we just talked about with a kli sheni is the same thing with a kli shlishi. Now, according to that, there would be a few problematic things. Okay, number one, I don't want to say problematic, but you'd have to know. Right? Number one, you would not be able to make tea with a tea bag at all on Shabbos. We'll talk in a few minutes how to make tea. Many people do have tea without tea bags. But again, let's hold off for that. Similarly, I mentioned before, this is going to be real reason why you're going to want to be careful. I apologize. According to this opinion, I would actually not be able, right, and I would walk out of the room now if we followed this opinion, and we'll see what I mean by that. I won't be able to dip my challah into the soup either, even in the bowl, right, even with the ladle, which we'll talk about also at the end, because it doesn't matter how many times you transfer it, right, it's going to cook. So again, there are people who follow this opinion, but that's a ramification of this opinion, yes. Well, if it cools down totally, yeah, but then you're not going to want to drink it.
But the walls are the same on each sheni, shlishi, or vi, whatever. The walls of the bowl are the same as the second bowl, third bowl. It's not like you're pouring from a lukewarm bowl.
So therefore, what?
Cold bowl.
So you're supporting this.
I don't
want
to say that, but
okay. But
sense.
In theory, you're supporting this opinion. Okay, interesting. So that's one side. Again, like all good machlokas, we're going to have a strict, a lenient, and somewhere in the middle. Okay, and we'll see some really interesting nuanced differences there. So on the one hand, we have this strict opinion that a kli shlishi, there's no such thing, right? It's the same thing as a kli sheni. On the other opposite end, we have what I mentioned before. Let's take a quick look in slide 47. from the Shilos V'Tshuvos Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein. He asked this question, Ha'im mutar lahachin ti b'kli shlishi b'Shabbos? Are you allowed to do this? So he says as follows, Tshuva. Lefi aniyas da'ati, according to my humble opinion, lo nira klal lomer, there's no reason at all to say, de'ika devarim shemis bashum b'kli shlishi. There's no reason to say that anything will cook in a kli shlishi. Ready for his logic? Mamish the opposite of what we just said. De'lo matzinu ella shebekli sheni yesh devarim hamis bashlim. Because we only find that a kli sheni can cook things. We don't find any source that tells us that a kli shlishi can. That Mishnah that gave us the exception of Kali Abishal only said a kli sheni has an exception. It didn't state that a kli shlishi did. Umimela me'achar she'en ani yodim yesh la'asar kol davar. Right, and by klisheni, because we don't know, like we talked about, so we had to aser everything in a klisheni, right? But we didn't find that anybody says that by a klishlishi. And therefore he says, mimela, I'm on the fourth, bottom, second to last line, gam ale hate hachem kechol shar hadavarim shebeklisheni suffik imis bashlam. So, tea is like everything else, that we don't put into a klisheni because of that debate we just talked about. Well, but klish lishi yesh lahatir, but in klish lishi you could do it. Literally the opposite logic, not just the opposite opinion, but the opposite logic. The Chazar Nishan of Soloveitchik said, you cannot make tea in a klish lishi, and forget tea. There will be stricter beyond tea, right? Challah, all that stuff. There's no such thing as klish lishi. Why? Because the poskim didn't tell us that there is. So therefore we have to treat it the same. Rav Moshe says the following. It's almost like he says that if Chazal wanted to make kli shlishi problematic, they would have told us. And by the fact that they didn't, means that it's okay, that it doesn't cook, right? Chazal only told us the things that can cook. Kli rishon, kli sheni, iri kli rishon, right? And therefore, nothing's going to cook. So according to Rav Moshe, let's be very clear, you could put anything you want, literally, into a kli shlishi on Shabbos, no problem, right? So for those of you, again, who use tea bags on Shabbos, again, make sure, first of all, that it's with a kli shlishi, right? Urn, cup, another cup, right? Hold on, I want to complicate that for a minute in a second. Urn, cup, another cup, put your tea bag in, beautiful. Okay, let's just digress for 1 minute, because I'm sure many people have that practice. What do you do if you have 10 cups of coffee you want to make? So, what am I getting at? What was the complication I raised earlier? The droplets at the end of that second cup. So does that mean, am I telling you that I have to, right, I have to take my klisheni, or the cup I'm using as my klisheni, take the water from the urn, pour it into a third cup, dry it out, go back, pour it in, dry it out, right? So the poskim say, no, assuming that you do the following. And this is important in practice. That's why I'm bringing it up. If you're doing it quickly enough that there really isn't a chance for whatever minimal droplets there are to really cool down, then it's not a problem. So what I really think you have to do, and for those of you who are super organized, this is probably going to be easy for you. For those of you who aren't, you just have to think about it. You really should line up the cups that you're going to make, take one designated klisheni, urn, cup, and you don't have to worry about this drying business in the middle. Because presumably it's happening quick enough that there isn't time to have to worry about those little droplets are really cooling off. So that's just a practical matter to make sure that you have enough klishlishi that you want to have for a tea, and at the same time, you don't have to worry about the Bishul problem we talked about before. Yes? You could. Yeah. I don't know that you have to do that, but maybe for those of you who don't, you know, want to line them up that way, maybe that's a better idea. Yeah, it's a good suggestion. Yes?
Is there any concept of pouring
from the chain? Great question. So, without getting into the details, yes, the poskim talk about, contemporary poskim talk about eerily klisheni. I was going to leave that out, not to make things more complicated than they already are, but kind of since you asked it.
No, Kippur on the Tevet?
So it's a good question. Most poskim assume that Irui Kli Sheni has the same status as Kli Shlishi. In which case, technically speaking, you could put the tea bag.
Anything past Kli Sheni is.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wanna, you know what, I wanna confirm that before the next year just to be safe about that. In the meantime, I would add the tea bags afterwards, but I think that that is okay. I wanna double check that one, but I wanna. Right? Could she line up the cups with the tea bag already in it? Because that's Irui from a Kli Sheni. I'm pretty sure that is okay, but let me try to confirm.
Coffee. Wait, so the coffee grounds, instant coffee can go into the
Yeah. Okay, let's try to, give me a few more minutes because then I'm going to wrap these examples together so that we're really not leaving with anything that is not clear. Now, we're not done. I presented you the strict opinion. I presented you the lenient opinion. Is that it? So of course not. There's always a good middle of opinion. So the Mishnah Berurah happens to be the middle of opinion. And let's take a quick look at that. Now, the Mishnah Berurah, interestingly, he's the middle opinion for the following reason. When he literally has a full page where he talks about how to make tea on Shabbos. Okay? The one suggestion that he makes, or that I'm sorry, that he does not make, is a Kli Shlishi. It's just like not found in his essay. So it's pretty clear that he thinks that you shouldn't make tea with a tea bag, because he gives some options with tea essence and things like that, which we'll talk about. Kli Shlishi is not one. But don't be mistakenly thinking that he thinks, like the first opinion, that there's no such thing as a Kli Shlishi at all. Why? Best proof. Take a look at the bottom slide here. So first the Shulchan Aruch, which I've alluded to many times already. V'nagul lezar lechatchila shel litein pas. You should be careful not to put bread. Afilu b'kli sheni. Right, even into a kli sheni. Kol zman shehayad tzolet esbo. As long as that soup is still a kli sheni, it's still hot, yad tzolet esbo, don't put bread. Because of the Bishol Achar Ofa conversation we had last time. Don't put that in. Baked. So last, you have to listen to last week's shir, and you'll get that. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Im rotza litain pas, but let's say, right, like I said, I'm going to have trouble following the Chazanish of Salvecha because I want to have challah in my supo. Yamtin ad shalo yihya yad saletas. So that's a great solution, not very practical. So wait till it cools off, in which case, okay, that's not going to be such a good thing to eat. Oh! Shalachol ha-pachos yish'av bekaf. Use a spoon, or what I'm going to translate here, into the ladle. Use a ladle min ha-kedera kedei shaha-ka'ara kli shlishi. Because then you have your pot of soup. Now you have the ladle, which can be viewed as a Kli Sheni. Now your pot is your bowl is a Kli Shlishi. Now you can put your challah into the soup. According to the Chazon Ish and Rav Salvechik, you can never put your challah in the soup. I don't know what they did. They probably just didn't have soup, because what's the point? Right? But you can, according to the Mishnah Berurah, he does have a concept of Kli Shlishi, right? He just said it. You can put baked items into a Kli Shlishi. But you cannot put tea into a Kli Shlishi. So what's the difference? So what the Mishnah Berurah says is as follows, and I believe I have this written for you on the next slide, and then we'll wrap up just bringing these things together with a couple of interesting charts, just because I want the practical examples to be clear. Yes, there's such a thing as Kli Shlishi. And just like Kli Sheni is Eino Mevashel, Kli Shlishi is not Mevashel. Well, let me restate. Kli Shlishi doesn't cook. Typically does not cook. But anything that I know for sure is in that category we called earlier Kale HaBishel, right? And there's only a few things. I didn't mention all of them. They're in the slides, like eggs, for example. I don't know why you'd have a raw egg and put into kushli. So I didn't mention all the examples, but there are a few more there. That tea is the best example. Anything that I know for sure is the thin, flaky kale habishal, that cannot go into a kli shlishi. But anything else can go into a kli shlishi. So again, on the one hand, we have Rav Soloveitchik, which says you cannot put anything in kli shlishi, or revi, or chamishi, or shishi. On the other hand, we have Rav Moshe, which says you can put anything you want into a kli shlishi. The Mishnah Berurah is somewhat of a middle road. He says you can put things that are not cooked in a kli shlishi unless we know for sure that it is kali abishal. Practically speaking, that is tea. Okay? So what I have here quickly, and I'm not going to, you know, I gave it to you so you'll see it in the next few charts, is what we would say about my two important examples. First, about dipping challah into the soup. So practically speaking, based on what we just learned, you must make sure your soup bowl is a kli shlishi, which typically shouldn't be a problem, with one exception that I mentioned quickly last time. That if you use your ladle, the way the Mishnah Berurah just said, your bowl will become the kli shlishi, right? Soup pot, ladle, bowl. Then you can dip your challah in. Again, if you follow the Chazon Ish and Rav Soloveitchik, then you can't. So this is a real question. You have to know what your rabbi tells you. But according to them, you wouldn't be allowed to, right? But either way, the Chazon Ish or according to Rav Moshe, both of them will allow you to dip your challah into the soup as long as your soup pot is a kli shlishi. Now the one little complication that I'm just warning you about is, what happens, like, you know, when you're serving that last bowl, right, you're down to the bottom of the pot. So what do we often do to get it out? Pour it out. Really could be problematic if you did that for that person who happens to get the bowl to put his challah in the soup, like, no joke. Or if you have baked croutons. Again, we mentioned last time, most of the croutons we use today are fried, right, in which case those are viewed as bishul, and therefore those would be allowed even a klisheni, so that won't be such a problem. But any baked product, i.e. challah, you would need the soup bowl to be a klishlishi to allow someone to do that. If we take a next, flip the page in terms of tea, so again, in terms of tea, so are you allowed to use a tea bag on Shabbos? So according to let's phrase it this way. According to Rav Moshe Feinstein, yes. Because he said nothing cooks in a kli shlishi. But according to both the Mishnah Berurah, for the reasons we just explained, and according to Rav Soloveitchik, the Chazon Ish, you would not be allowed to. So again, everyone has their rabbi. Ask your rabbi what to do. But what's important is that we remember that you still can make tea. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah talks at length about. Right? So you can make tea essence. Right? Very simple. Before Shabbos, take a smaller pot. Take, it depends how much tea you want. When we do it at home, it's like 5 or 6 tea bags. You know, make a really like thin layer of really, really strong tea. And then on Shabbos, you can go ahead and pour it in. Again, just a little chazara with this example. If I do that, I really most likely would never, well, I don't want to say never. Would I need a kli shlishi for that? You tell me. Just so you see why I'm make you think a little. I made the tea before Shabbos, right? I have this tea sense.
No, it's like putting the milk in the coffee.
Good. So it's like putting the milk in the coffee. So really, really, and this is where I'm tying back to what you might have been trained for coffee too. Really, really, I could put that tea sense into a kli shlishi, right? I don't need a kli shlishi. It was cooked already. What do you add to your tea? So sugar, I believe. Again, I didn't do a machazar on this, but I believe sugar is cooked. Most of the sweeteners we have is cooked. What else might you put into tea? Lemon. So lemon, without getting into it, is more complicated. I don't want to say it's so simple that you can't put it in, but advisable for sure. According to some, really, the lemon is not cooked. So based on what we learned, you would not be allowed to put it into a kli shlishi, and that's why I think the general rule is everyone's kind of trained. Anytime you're making any of these things, even though the reality is does anyone add lemon to coffee? I don't think so, right? So is there anything that we would add to coffee that's not cooked? I don't think so, right? So technically speaking, most of our coffee we really could make in a kli shlishi. Tea, technically yes, but not if you want to add certain things to it. So that's why when we're educated, we're typically told, go to a Kli Shlishi and you can avoid your problems, right? And that is a good idea, whether you go by either one of these. And just the last thing, and then we're going to close, I'm admitting that we're skipping a large conversation, but we've already talked about it, this idea of the ladle. So I just want to mention one thing. I might have mentioned it quickly in passing last time. So there really is a debate about the status of the ladle. Does the ladle really get treated as a Kli Rishon or a Kli Sheni? I just told you it's a Kli Sheni. Now, the reason why it's even a question is because it could be sitting submerged for extended periods of time in the hot soup. So maybe that should be treated like a Kli Rishon. So to avoid that problem, what all poskim say is just don't do that, right? Meaning, if you're just dishing out the soup and then you put the ladle on the side, there's nothing to talk about, right? But if you keep it sitting submerged in there, then that will be a problem, potentially. So I'm just recommending, for all of the reasons we mentioned, don't leave the ladle submerged. Because again, if the ladle is submerged, then my bowl of soup is a Kli Sheni, and now I'm not a happy camper, I can't dip my challah into it. Okay? So keep the ladle out. Again, but I realize, again, all, that's why I said these first two shiurim, like you can't really talk about one issue without the other, right? Remember, when you're going back to your second round of soup again, then you have the issue of drying off the label because now it's cold, because I'm like encouraging you to avoid one thing. I'm telling you that you're going to be encountering another problem, so make sure you kind of cover both of them. Yes?